If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Benjamin R. Harrison.
If you're looking for a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast, you're in the right place.
Yeah.
Just to underscore the show open here, I want you to be sure what you're getting.
Yeah.
Fair viewer.
Adam, the other day I was... I think it was the first episode. We had our first ever episode with an advertisement on it. Actually, not that's not really true, but our first ever episode where we were paid to advertise something.
Right.
And that was a big coup for us because, you know, I think we have a big enough audience now that I think that we're both feeling like it should not be a net loss in terms of hours put into this show for us to do the show. And
at the same time, I also feel like we could lose everything with a bad turn of phrase or a late publication of the show. I mean, the stakes have never been higher.
That's true. Anyways, I was excited to hear how the episode sounded with an ad in it. And so I was listening back to an episode the morning it came out, and I just had it on the little speaker on my iPhone, and I was walking around the apartment getting ready for my day, and my wife walked into the room and overheard maybe the first greatest gen she's ever heard. And she's like, "Oh, did you edit little sounds from the real show in there? That's so cute."
Wow. On the one hand, I'm glad that she appreciates the quality and the effort that we put into the show. On the other hand, it's like coming home after getting a haircut and like your wife not noticing.
Oh, I couldn't say anything about that because I have never once in my entire life noticed a haircut that my wife got.
Oh boy. That'll put you in the doghouse, Ben.
It put me in the doghouse the first like dozen times when we were dating, and now it's just a running joke. Like, she can tell me I'm going to go get a haircut and then I'll be home a little later tonight, and she'll come home and she'll be like, "Notice anything different?" And it will genuinely stump me what's different.
It's baked into our DNA, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, of course, she notices every single time I get a haircut. What I'm trying to say is I'm a terrible husband.
And yet she does not enjoy what is clearly your life's work and your calling. So I think you're probably even.
Yeah. She asked me if that hurt my feelings. And I was like, honestly, it doesn't really. I don't think that it's really your cup of tea. But that's true for most humans. This show is an acquired special taste. And
that's the tension, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Friends of mine, this just happened to me very recently. A friend of mine was taking a road trip, like an 8-hour road trip, substantial, with a lady friend of his.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Hey, I'm thinking about queuing up one of your podcasts. I've never heard it before, and neither is my lady friend."
Yeah.
Which one should I start with? And I said, that would be a terrible idea because you don't watch Star Trek.
We have viewers that don't watch the show, though.
He was like, it's all right. I think it'll be great. And so I gave him a couple of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
A couple hours later, he texts me back and he's like, we got through 20 minutes. I don't want to hear that.
That's hurtful.
Like, on the one hand, I appreciate the effort. It's like a friend does that for another friend. You try to enjoy the thing that they put so much effort into. But I told him he wasn't going to like it. And sure as shit, he didn't. I feel like he didn't have to tell me about those 20 minutes, but
yeah. Well, Adam, there's only one Star Trek podcast that I like, and we're doing it.
It's true. Let's try to make this episode an episode that can get past 20 minutes to a stranger. What do you say?
I'm in.
All right. This is one of my favorite episodes, Ben, of the series. It's season 5. Episode 5, The Game.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Now, this episode opens with Riker playing, like in the words of Dan Savage, cops and robbers in your underpants.
Yeah, what do you think is going on here?
So it's one of the most campy openings I think the show has ever had, right?
Oh, I fell over! Oh, I fell over again!
Like, this could almost be something that happened in the original series. It's so weird. But there is a loafed-out woman. She's got the kind of loaf that can only be described as a vagina butt, which is she has two butt cheeks and a vagina right there on her forehead.
They're a little bit bubbly too, like when you cook a pizza at home and you get like the big blistered dough bubble.
Yeah,
like there's some bubbly loaf here, I think.
Do you mean bobbly?
I do indeed.
That was for one person out there in our audience. You know who you are.
But you're right though. They're like engaging in the sort of foreplay that is very chaste, like Edo style foreplay.
Mm-hmm.
And like they're doing this because they can't just explicitly show the light bondage and loaf play that happens
right
off screen.
Yeah, this is a 6 p.m. television show. They can't show it going in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Into the forehead.
Right.
Well, so this lady's name is Etana Joel, and she is having a bit of a laugh running around the Risa hotel room of one Riker William T. And she has his communicator badge in her hand, and she's playing a bit of a game of keep away. And this game ends with her tossing his communicator out the window.
I don't believe you did that.
Believe it.
Into the rest of the soundstage that they're on.
You would think that there were some military-style shore leave rules about, like, the things you leave out on a dresser in a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I would think that the communicator would be a big part of that rule.
Because think about all the things that they use the communicator for. Like, if they say, like, lock onto my signal and beam it off the port bow, you know, and they like slap their communicator on a bomb that's about to go off, that bomb gets beamed out into space. Like, that is their identity in their society.
It marks you as a Federation person too, in a way that I know the military, when they take shore leave, like they're not going to wear IDs
right
in places that could mark them in mixed company as a potential target.
Yeah.
And so he's got his Horgon out and his communicator out, and probably a bunch of credit cards just on the dresser waiting to get stolen.
Yeah. Do you think there was a cut scene of him rummaging around in the bushes later because that was the only way he was going to get beamed back up onto the ship?
You don't want a landscaper to weed whack the communicator.
No, that would be terrible. That thing got sucked up into a into a lawnmower.
Yeah. So they're chasing each other around the room. She chucks the communicator out, and then he continues the chase.
Yeah. This is Riker's level of dedication to boning down.
They end up on the bed. Like, he sort of, they chase each other, and they sort of give up in that way that typically ends in doing it. They fall into bed together.
Yep.
She's on his back, and she's like, I got this thing I want to put on your head. And it's a 1989-style Walkman metal headband.
Yeah.
With a couple of eye shooters out front.
Mm-hmm.
And she puts it on him, and then we see his field of view. And what we see in his POV is sort of a lower grid matrix and a couple of buttholes.
Yeah, it's like whack-a-mole if you had to toss a frisbee into a butthole.
Yeah, it's whack a butthole. it's ultimate butthole.
Yeah, it's like it's a bit like Google Glass or like it's like an augmented reality thing where it's like in your field of view, but you can still see. Like, you can see, like, a wicker chair and a couple of wall hangings in the background of this.
You know what's crazy is this show is 25 years old, and these things look way cooler than Google Glass.
I know.
How did Google fuck that up so bad?
I know.
Just base it off of this thing.
Yeah. They should have just based it off of this thing. And then they wouldn't have run into the problem of people using their product getting called glass holes.
Riker's like, what am I supposed to do with these digital buttholes? And she's like, you just sort of let it happen. You see the frisbee into the butthole, and he's having a hard time. He's winging the frisbee all over the field.
Yeah, she's like, no, it's in the wrist. It's in the wrist. And Riker's like, oh, I know from things that are all in the wrist. So he gets it in.
He gets it in, and what happens to him is pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
We cut back outside of his POV, and we see him sort of like half eye roll.
Yeah, he gets.
You can tell something good is happening.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to check the mattress, under where he's lying at that moment.
Right, right. And so instead of a squint to theme song, we get sort of like a quarter orgasm.
Yeah.
into theme song.
O face to theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of, I feel like we say it every episode, but one of the strangest opening sequences of all time.
Because his face really fills the frame.
Yeah, it's as close as we ever get.
With a lot of people, this wouldn't be flattering, but Frakes has got a good-looking face. Yeah. He can pull it off.
He can do this. I feel like by the time you get to the films, I don't know if Frakes could do it, but they got him at his peak.
Peak Frakes.
Yeah. Come back. The ship is gonna go do some science somewhere. Riker's back on board, and he's like getting the download. He like saunters onto the bridge, and the captain is like telling him all the different shit that is going on. And there's some good news, some bad news. The bad news is their big science project they have coming up. They're only going to have 2 weeks to do it. But the good news is Wesley.
The boy. Young Wesley Crusher.
My son.
Is coming back on board the ship.
It doesn't feel like he's been gone very long, does it?
Yeah, when did he leave? Like a little bit in about this point in season four?
Yeah.
So
I guess in real time it's been a year.
Yeah.
But in showtime it hasn't been that long.
Has it been? Is this like his spring break or something?
It's not long enough to miss him.
Yeah.
To me, anyway. But in the life of a show, he's been away a long time.
Well, guess who else is aboard, Adam?
Who's that, Ben?
The lovely Ensign Robin Loeffler.
Yeah.
And she is age appropriate for young Wesley Crusher.
Sure is.
Which is great news.
Yeah.
We get a reveal that she is back for this episode of her. She's like pulling some crap out of the wall to do some engineering on it. I guess she's got some like She's going to, like, do some isolinear chip Jenga, maybe. And Riker saunters into engineering, gets a similar update from Geordi to the one he just got from the captain, and then he's like, hey, buddy, listen.
Geordi, I brought something back from Risa that you have got to try.
Yeah, and Geordi's like, all right, rub it in. Last time I tried to go to Risa, I got turned into a Manchurian candidate by the Romulans. Jerk.
Yeah. Some asshole got to enjoy Risa who barely looked like me.
Yeah. Come to think of it, this is the next person from the crew to go to Risa, and it is also a plot to take over the ship, isn't it?
Yeah. It's sort of making the case that Risa should be associated with danger.
Yeah, maybe we change the shore leave policy with regard to Risa. Well, anyways, Geordi's like,
I'd love to, but I'm running a full sensory calibration in about 10 minutes. Can I wait?
Ashley Judd is here, so I'm not gonna get distracted just yet. And Riker's like, well, I can certainly understand that. So he heads to 10 forward, and Troy, who is fresh off of an episode that unpotted her plant, is sitting there being the most two-dimensional character that she can possibly be.
She's back in the fucking pot, big time.
Yeah.
She's in a pot so big, like you ever go to a lawn care nursery place and they have those pots that are just impossibly large, yeah. Like as big as a car?
Yeah.
That's where she's in.
You think they were just repotting her? Like they had her out last episode to like loosen up the root ball, and they just had put some soil into a bigger pot, stuck her in it, and they threw a little water on.
I was thinking a lot about why I find her character so objectionable in terms of the backstory that they give her,
mm-hmm.
And I think it comes from what the intent is from the writer, because at first I just became angry at the writer's room for making her one-dimensional.
Yeah.
But then I started to think about why.
Yeah.
Like if your intention is to create a character that a female that you don't know and don't understand would identify with, like this is a science fiction person with a contemporary interest that the wife of a nerd could enjoy and identify with.
Yeah.
What sucks is you're deprived of an intellectual strength, a more interesting hobby that could be enjoyable for everyone in the room.
Yeah, her hobbies are wearing sexy leotard and eating chocolate.
And it sucks because any woman in the room watching this program could enjoy her if she had a more interesting hobby. Like, why?
Well, and I think that
dumb her down.
I feel like the women I know that love this show really do like Troy and wish there was more to her, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's so many like potential things you could have, right? Like Worf has some conflict about having been raised on Earth but being a Klingon. She's half Betazoid, half human. What if she like really resented the fact that she was half human because it limits her abilities or something like that or whatever, you know, like she's just a chocolate eater. It sucks.
It would have been interesting if she had a little bit of her best friend Tasha Yar in her, and the thing that made them friends was how into mixed martial arts they were or something.
Yeah.
You know, like what if her character contrast was that she was a huge ass kicker.
Yeah.
But she is so soft.
Yeah.
In all ways, and that's just hard. So she's in 10 forward basically finger banging a chocolate mousse when Riker climbs over a chair and sits down with her, and she gets a full-on, like, you remember when Ro in the last episode had a oner and like told the most shocking, terrifying story of watching her father die but while being tortured to death?
Yeah.
Like Deanna Troi gets a monologue about like giving oral sex to a banana split that goes on for like a minute and a half. That's like the spoken word part to a sex rap song.
Yeah.
You have to spoon the fudge around the rim. leaving only the ice cream in the middle. Then you gently spoon the ice cream around the sides, like you're sculpting it.
Yeah, it was very jackable.
You know something's up with Riker when he doesn't just hit the flirtation ball right back at her and instead is like, you want to play a game? I feel like on any other day, Riker would have been like ordering cannolis and like shooting cheese out at her, you know? Like playing dessert flirtation games.
Yeah.
But he's not interested. He wants to share this game.
Dipping a biscotti into her chocolate.
Yeah.
Well, she gets excited about this game, and we cut away to the boy beaming on board, and O'Brien is standing there a little bit indifferent to the whole thing, and Wesley asks if he can, like, go say what's up to everybody on the bridge, and he's like, well, let me ask. Radio's up to Worf. Worf is like, yeah, I guess so. I don't see a big problem with it.
Like, as dispassionate as it gets. Like, it's totally administrative.
Yeah.
Like, Worf doesn't even know Wesley is the effect that he's putting.
Yeah, it's fun. And so Wesley is a little sheepish, walks up to the observation lounge, walks in, and leaves the lights off for an uncomfortable amount of time. Eventually the lights pop on, and there's a very half-hearted yell of
surprise
from the assembled senior staff, and his mama runs around the curve table and gives him a big hug. Everybody's really excited to see him, even Picard.
Comodo tua latinitas est.
I feel like a surprise party is something you only ever see on television. Have you ever been a part of a surprise party or been the victim of one?
We threw one for my wife, I think, when she turned...
Was it a lights-off affair? Like
it was just,
jump up from behind the couch thing?
No, I think she was expecting to be having drinks with a couple of her friends, and it wound up being me and, like, 25 of her friends at a bar.
It's so strange.
It was good for her. She's easy to rope into a scheme like that and very amenable to it. I told her afterwards.
Because you would put the invitation in the podcast so you know she wouldn't hear it.
Yeah, exactly. I told her afterwards if she ever got the idea of throwing me a surprise party, not to.
Oh.
I would not like it. It's something I always say, Adam. There's nothing worse than free surprise barbecue.
Hmm.
Like, free barbecue is the best thing ever. But if it's a surprise, it's the worst thing ever, because what if you ate like a peanut butter sandwich 5 minutes ago? And now there's all this barbecue, and you can't throw yourself into it the way barbecue deserves.
Yeah, that's a tough spot.
You know?
And then you just eat until you're sick.
I need to prepare myself to be around other humans.
Then you throw up in the ash catcher.
Yeah, that's no fun.
That's a bad time.
Yeah.
So... it turns out that Worf is the baker.
Tarbokian pound cake.
Of the senior staff.
I made it myself.
Yeah.
And offers Wes a slice of cake that he made himself.
Yeah. This cake it's like the size of a baby's head, this slice of cake. It's fucking huge.
How do you think he does it? Like, we've only seen cooking depicted once, and that was when Riker made those shitty eggs.
Yeah, Worf loved those eggs.
I wish we got a montage of Worf baking this cake.
Yeah, getting a little bit of loose flour in his loaf. You know,
got a frilly apron on.
Yeah.
He's in the back room of Ten Forward, like borrowing the commercial kitchen stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He probably doesn't have any. He doesn't have like an oven in his quarters.
KitchenAid, a warrior's mixer.
it's a real turnaround on the way he was on the radio. But anyways, Wesley's going to be hanging out for a few days, and he's going to be helping out. Like, he's technically on vacation, but he's going to, you know, he knows his way around the ship. The senior staff trust him, so he's gonna do some help him outs. He heads down to engineering.
It's a busman's holiday, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, he heads down to engineering, and this is kind of like the kind of vacation my dad takes, where he's got 2 weeks off and he decides to, like, strip and rehull a boat. You know, it's like, that's the most dirty and least relaxing thing I can possibly imagine.
How stressful is your real life if that's what your vacation is?
Yeah, exactly.
It is a guiding principle of a Darth Vader's base. If you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Well, he heads down to engineering, and Geordi gives him a little little task to accomplish, and he's having trouble when the lovely Robin Leffler tosses him a bone, tells him how to manually recalibrate the dilithium inverter or whatever, and they hit it right off, and it's so different from the time that he met the lady that turned into a.
The werebear.
A werebear. You know, like, yeah. he didn't know the first thing about saying what's up to a girl. And now he's like, I mean, I wouldn't say his game, but he's like, he holds his own. And this is Ashley Judd we're talking about.
You know how damaged you feel after a really bad breakup and how long it takes to get over? Mm-hmm. Like, imagine the werebear PTSD that Wesley has. Like, intimacy has got to be so difficult the first couple of times. Like, is she going to change?
Yeah, he goes in for that first smooch, and he pauses and says, you're not going to change into a Star Wars cantina alien, are you?
I got to believe that he's leaving the chocolate mousse at home for this one. That didn't work out well the first time.
Yeah.
He's got different moves since going back to the academy. He's walking around with a little bit of confidence.
Yeah. Speaking, Adam, of walking around, there's a scene that happens right before this that I wanted to get your take on, where Data and Wesley are walking around in the corridors together.
Mm-hmm.
Did you look at Data's chin in that scene?
I have to say I did not, specifically.
There's something weird about his chin. And I looked if there was, like, trivia or goofs or something to see if, like, you know, like they had to cover up a motorcycle injury or something. But it goes unanswered, and it's gone the next time you see Data. But he like has like a very obvious weird thing going on in his chin.
Whoa, yeah. They caked on some putty, it looks like.
Yeah.
Some makeup putty.
Yeah. It kind of looks like he has like the world's largest pimple, but they've painted over it.
I don't know how you're Brent Spiner and you wear makeup for as long as you wear it without your face just going crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it surprises me that it isn't more of an issue.
Yeah, I mean, he and Worf sat in the makeup chair for, like, hours every day and then spent an entire shoot day in makeup and then in, like, extensive makeup. Like, he has it on his hands.
Yeah.
On his neck. Like, I don't think Worf probably has it on his neck, but he's, you know, he's wearing a helmet. I bet those zits that happen around your hairline on Michael Dorn are out of fucking control.
I bet they're the size of grapes.
Yeah. His loaf just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Cover it up.
They introduce a character trait with Robin, like, that I don't think we've gotten up until now, which is the idea of someone who's quirky. I think the last time we got this was with the girl who had a three-episode arc in The Best of Both Worlds, who spilled her coffee on Picard.
Yeah.
Like, she was quirky. And that was the last time we got a quirky character, I think.
Yeah. She's got, like student film level quirkiness, though.
Yeah, Leffler's proto quirky.
Yeah,
in a weird way.
She's got her
that becomes way popular in several years.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like the idea of a character that has a long list of personal edicts the way she does. I feel like I read a lot of scripts in college that had that type of character quirk.
Are you talking about your time in film school, Ben?
Yeah, when I went to the New York University Canbar Institute for Film and Television Production at the Tisch College of the Arts.
Hmm. Good for you.
My love is a fever, long until for that which longer nurses the disease.
It appears that that young Wesley Crusher's flirtation is having an effect.
Yeah.
She's batting the flirtation ball back at him.
Yeah.
They're
batting
playing
her
some
eyelashes.
Flirtation tennis.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's working. And so they make plans for later. Why don't we meet up at 10 forward for a little after work hang? And she's totally into it.
She's not more than just into it. He suggests coffee and she's like, fuck coffee. Let's go on a date, dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's around this time that Dr. Crusher, Wesley's mom, turns off Data and then shoots a ray gun into his head.
It seems a little out of character.
Yeah. So the ringleaders of this new conspiracy are Troy, the doctor, and Commander Riker. I guess Geordi didn't get roped in just yet. Still too busy. But
not cool enough for a conspiracy?
No. I also wondered, like, because they never show Geordi using the thing.
Yeah,
I feel like
they
wrote that scene in with Riker asking him about it so that they could establish that he was going to be susceptible to the thing without having to show him using it, because it wouldn't fit over his visor, and he doesn't have irises or pupils, so how would it shoot rays into his eyes?
I really want to know that.
They never answer it.
No. Geordi puts it on. He's like, this thing fucking sucks. I can't see anything.
Yeah. So Wesley runs home to get ready for this date, and his mom is like, oh, you got to try this game. It's great. And he's like, well, listen, I'll try it later, but I'm really busy right now. I got a hot date with Ensign Leffler from engineering. And that's enough to satisfy the doctor that she doesn't need to put a headband on her son just yet. And then, Adam, Wesley goes and opens a door that I have wanted to see the inside of from episode one of this show.
It's true.
Wesley's sweater closet. And this definitely has been cleared out a little bit. Like, he's away at school, so this isn't like his full sweater collection, which is a bit of a shame, but there are like four or five Coogees in there.
You imagine like what Mr. Rogers' sweater closet would look like fully outfitted and stacked. It's like a partial Rogers situation.
Yeah.
Skeleton Rogers.
Mm, yeah. But there's some new sweaters that we haven't seen yet. I feel like maybe some golden oldies are in there.
If you're the set designer, you've got to be just like rubbing your hands together, like at the opportunity. Like, these giant sweaters have been hanging in wardrobe.
Yeah, they've been
for five seasons.
They've been on like a metro shelf in a big Rubbermaid tub with Coogee written on the outside of it.
You got to fold those things up like tents.
Yeah, yeah, man. You keep the poles in a separate bag.
They're going to fall right off those hangers. They're too heavy.
They're too heavy. And the necks are too big, you know?
Yeah.
Got a lot of boat neck type of deals on there. But the sweater he opts for is a new one on me. But it's got kind of like a Bajoran uniform style to it.
Yeah, it's shouldery.
Yeah, it's very shouldery. And Robin has put on a lovely little outfit as well. And they're having this nice date. Drinking something pink that I can only assume Commander Riker suggested.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, what's up with this game that everybody's playing? Like, everybody is talking about this crazy game on the ship. And they, like, start looking around. And that, like, everybody in 10 Forward that is doing this thing is obviously strung out. They're like, well, maybe we should look into this thing before we try it. So they had
everyone except the servers.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a weird contrast.
Yeah, like, it's a weird
servers
class
don't
thing.
Have time for games.
Yeah. Yeah.
It felt like a really contemporary scene in that way, where you'll go to a restaurant sometimes and you'll see 8 out of 10 tables, people will just be looking at their phones.
Mm.
And so when you see two people with their heads up and the rest of the room with their heads down,
Yeah.
It seemed like a familiar scene.
They're like, what's up with these?
In sort of a sad way.
What's up with these iPhones everybody's using? Should we try this, or is it like an addictive thing?
It's like an iPhone allegory.
You are just desperate to get the title on this one, aren't you?
Does it sound that way? I think I'm just feeling particularly quippy today, not unlike a Robin Leffler.
So they head down to the lab and they plug one of these things into the brain simulator machine, and they start running simulations, and they're like, hey, this kind of looks like what would happen if this thing was injecting heroin straight into the temples of your head.
It looks like it feels great.
Could be pretty addictive. So they're like, what's going on here?
They're doing a lot of explaining to each other as a way to explain to the viewer. Mm-hmm. Like they're describing symptoms that sound like contemporary psychotropic drug symptoms.
Yeah.
So Wes is like, I got to go tell the captain about this. He's got to nip this shit in the bud.
Yeah. I feel like this was like half him doing the right thing and half him trying to kind of show what an important dude he was to Robin Leffler.
Like, yeah, he's really one degree of separationing her.
Hey, listen, I'm pretty close with the cap. I'm going to run up there and say what's up to him.
She's like, how close are you? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it.
He's on a no-knock basis with the captain. Walks in and tells him about his concerns, and the captain's like,
I'll start an investigation immediately. Thank you, Mr. Crusher.
I feel like we've had this a couple of times where the captain listens to somebody tell him about some terrible thing that's befalling the ship, and he's already under its sway.
Yeah,
so he has to kind of bullshit through hearing the complaint, and then Wesley walks out with some confidence that he's done the right thing running this one up the ladder. But alone in his ready room, Captain Picard swivels his chair around, and you see that he too is under the sway of the game. The game is stealing everybody's consciousness and putting it under its sway.
This is the hinge in the episode where it turns into Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, yeah.
From here to the end of the episode is an intensity jump that works. It fucking works. It's 25 years old. Like, there are some legit fears going on from here into the end, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I mean, this is a series that has taken a stab at the who-can-you-trust storyline.
Yeah,
plenty of times, and at this point in its run, they have figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, the next scene, which is just a POV of the game being played, walking around in 10 forward, and it walks up to Robin Leffler, and you hear Chief O'Brien's voice.
Have you tried this?
O'Brien's got to be so happy. He's like, God, finally, an escape from my life.
But even that scene is, like, really ominous, right?
Yeah. This sort of underscores an argument that I've made for a long time about Star Trek being a place. Like, this Body Snatcher story is transportable, and you can play it in a bunch of different genres, and it works especially well here.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
So for the rest of the episode, it is, you know, fun and games with Wes and Robin avoiding the Body Snatched Enterprise crew.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the vagina butt lady from the first scene has shown up with a scary-looking spaceship and is asking Picard about when she can take delivery of her new ship and what the plan is for getting the game into everybody else in the Federation's hands. Like, this is a full-blown takeover that they're attempting.
Yeah, and the bridge crew really plays it subtly. Like, there have been episodes in this show where the crew has been taken over and their voices get deep, for example, or they walk around robotically. But the effect of this game is even scarier when they look and act like they always have.
Yeah, Picard is just...
They're just taking action in a way that's very arch.
Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah. Well, we've got some great news. We're gonna get this game onto the hood. We're gonna get it to Starbase 27. We're even gonna get it to the Academy once we get Wesley under our sway.
This idea of doing something evil that you believe is doing something right is the scariest thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is terrifying when the person taking the scary action doesn't know it.
Right. There's a scene where, like, they come and check in on Robin and Wesley, and they've put fake game headsets on. Like, at some point, like, they start looking into the fact that Data is deactivated because they're like, okay, everybody is body snatched, and Data is the only person on board that wouldn't potentially fall victim to this. So what happened to him? And they discover that there's a very precise laser beam-like cut in his neural net that's, like, preventing his brain from controlling his body,
mm-hmm.
which is also super scary, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's basically been in a persistent vegetative state the entire episode, but has been fully conscious the entire time, which for Data, like, I can't tell if that would be, like, terrifying or incredibly satisfying, because he's always looking for ways to experiment with ending his own life.
Yeah. There could be some peace there.
Yeah.
He's basically the protagonist from Metallica's One video.
Yeah. But eventually he gets down to engineering, and he's, like, working with Robin on what the next step is, and he looks up at her, and she is very obviously strung out herself. And so he starts running, and Riker and Worf are chasing him. And Wesley has, like, a bunch of different gambits for getting away from them, you know, where he, like, sets up a phaser to shoot a force field so that they think he's in one place. He takes off his badge and leaves it somewhere.
He does some site-to-site transport.
Eventually he's crawling around in the Jeffries tube, and Worf and Riker get him. I was trying to remember if there was some specific place he was supposed to be running to, or was he just trying to get away from them?
See, I was thinking the same thing. Like, this scene plays for great tension, and it's especially scary, again, because you know Worf and Riker are so capable.
Yeah.
Like,
and this doesn't diminish their capabilities at all.
Right. And as he was escaping, I was thinking back to that scene where he and Robin are in their quarters and they're trying to plan out what to do, and they come up with the idea of coming up with the fake headbands to sort of blend in with all the people playing it. But, like, he's got to have another plan other than that, right? Like, what's the end game? Don't you have to have an escape plan for leaving the ship somehow? And he doesn't have that.
Way out.
It's pure fight or flight survival that's happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't ever have, like, a moment where he pauses, and then ghostly over one of his shoulders, the head of his friend Jake comes and goes, "Steal a shuttlecraft, Wesley."
Everyone's doing it. You want to be cool, don't you?
So they catch him, and they take him up onto the bridge, and they plop him down in the captain's chair so that the loafy lady on the view screen can see this. And they put the headset on him, and they Alex his eyes, like in Clockwork Orange,
mm-hmm.
and they shoot the beams into his eyes, and for all we know, the episode is over. Like, the bad guys won. And just then, the lights drop, and who should walk onto the bridge but a newly up and running Commander Data. And he's got, like, the flash from the climactic scene in Rear Window. and he just, like, he's holding it up to everybody's face and giving him a couple of strobes.
Yeah. He rolls up like a techno DJ, and he does the drop. as soon as he gets on the bridge.
Why am I sweating so much?
Because you're feeling it.
Is that a good thing?
Yes!
It is a good thing that the functional equivalent of going to a rave managed to deprogram everybody, right?
Usually it's the opposite effect.
What would they have done if rave light hadn't worked?
I think what happens is what Data always does when he wants to take over is he gasses the crew.
Yeah, I guess he could have gassed the crew. That's a good point.
How many people do you think Data kills on the way to the bridge? We are deprived of that journey from Six Bay to the bridge, aren't we?
Yeah, that would have been fun to see. Just punching holes in people. Well, everybody just kind of like rubs their eyes and shakes their heads, and Picard turns to Itana on the FaceTime and is like, "Hey,
your attempt to capture our ship has failed."
A super impressive try, but it didn't work out. Sorry.
They shoot the tractor beam at them, and their plan from there is to drag them back to space prison.
Yep. The plot is foiled. The optical burst did its job. Now it's time for Wesley to head home, and there's a touching little goodbye scene between him and Robin before he heads off to the transporter bay. And it's made pretty clear in this scene, even though they have a cute little smooch, that they didn't ever bone down, and that just seemed like a real shame.
Yeah, she never got to see his birthmark.
Yeah.
Ashley Judd plays this scene really interestingly to me. There's a kind of acting where you're sad enough to cry real tears. Yeah. And then there's two steps back from that where you just make your eyes well up.
Mm-hmm.
And she has the self-control to just well up her eyes, but not in a way that's like campy or cheesy.
Yeah.
It's really subtle. I thought she did a great job.
It's so subtle that I almost wonder how... I kind of want to like rewatch this scene in SD to see if you can see that, because it's like we're talking about pixels of distinction.
Yeah, I mean, if she's not an actress by now, she is after this episode. Like, yep. She's legit.
Mm-hmm. Nicely done, Ashley Judd. I looked it up, and the previous episode, I think, is her first film and television credit.
I don't recall seeing an "and introducing" in the credits. Did she get one of those?
I don't remember.
Because you fucking deserve that when it's your first time.
Yeah, she did a great job.
Yeah. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did like this episode. I think that there's some plot holes we discussed, but generally speaking, really good performances. It's really fun for this show to have a character written off and come back and be as developed as this.
Yeah.
Like, he had character development that we can do some headcanon on, but he's a more mature version of the same character, and that's very well executed in terms of scripting and in terms of performance.
If you'll forgive the wordplay, he really does hit the ground running. Like, he picks up right where he left off.
Yeah.
And they don't waste a lot of time re-character developing him for a new viewer's benefit.
Yeah, there's no "the boy, my son Wesley Crusher" stuff. It's like they don't have to like bop you over the head with who he is and what his relationship is with everybody else. They do a great job of showing and not telling.
Yeah, they don't talk down to the viewer that way, and that's something I really value on a show that at one point was incredibly campy with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adam, do you want to check and see if we have any subspace communications?
Yeah, let's hit it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
It doesn't sound like we have any messages this week, Ben, but if any of our viewers are interested in a personal or business style priority one message, they can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Yeah, go do that.
Ben, did you find or flee from a drunk Shimoda this episode?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I fled from one, Adam.
Yeah? Who do you got?
My drunk Shimoda for this episode is Worf. And it is just because of the... There were a lot of things Worf did that I thought were Shimoda worthy in this episode, but the scene with him crawling in the Jeffries tube was the one that I wanted to highlight. I could watch Worf crawling like an infant all day long. I think it is so funny looking. How about yourself?
Like, you just can't see Worf playing this game. And they don't even bother to try showing us that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'd be tantamount to, like, him knitting in a corner. Like, it's such a soft hobby that I sort of want that. Like, I want to see a character like Worf, even Worf, fall prey to the game.
Like, if there had been a wordless scene where Worf has the headset on and is also baking at the same time in his quarters, just like a 3-second little slice of life that they dropped in, like in between Wesley going from the lab to Picard or something. How fucking amazing would that be?
It'd be great. I think what we're both agreeing on is who I'm going to give my Shimoda to, and it is the decision. We don't get that moment of seeing Worf try to put on the tiny headphones that he can't, and then he like snaps the headband in half and just sort of manually holds them to the side of his head before later on replacing them with like a quad XL version with like a giant hoop on the top. Like the
Warrior's Google Glass.
Yeah. I really wanted that. Yeah, and so to not, like, they chose not to give us the Geordi scene, but man, to not give us the Worf scene is a little unforgivable. So maybe I'm giving it to Worf.
Yeah, give it to Worf. Double Fine. Shimoda, Worf.
Fine.
Tomok and Jalad and Tanagra.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class.
Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode of Star Trek The Next Generation is Season 5, Episode 7, Unification, Part 1.
I'mification. Unification.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to let you do the rest of the show, Ben.
Picard and Mr. Spock clash over a proposed reunification of the Romulans and the Vulcans. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I do remember this episode. Do you remember the marketing campaign around this? Like, they really commercialed the hell out of the return of Spock, as I remember.
Oh, man.
Important.
Occasionally
music.
People send us those TV spots that they played on KBHK Channel 24 when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And did I say 24? I meant 44.
You're going to get some letters for that one, Ben.
It's real fun stuff.
This is, in many ways, like their chance to recapture the people that didn't quite get the uptake on new Star Trek. This feels to me like a grab for old Star Trek people who weren't on board with a terrible first couple seasons.
Yeah, who took one look at the makeup they put Bones in episode one and were like, nope.
Could you blame them?
Would you veto this episode, Adam?
I would not.
I would not either. I think this is going to be a good one.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, well, that's the next one we're watching. Thanks to everybody for listening. If you'd like to chat with us about this episode or any other episode, use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Benjamin R, AHR.
If you'd like to talk in a format that is longer than 140 characters, we've got some great conversations happening on our Facebook page and group, as well as Reddit.
Yeah, you can sign up for our mailing list by going to gach.biz/mail. And we should thank Dark Materia for our theme music, and Adam Ragusea for much of the other music you hear on the program.
If you like what we've done on our show, we'd really appreciate a review or a referral to a buddy or, I don't know, put it up on the Star Trek Reddit. I feel like those people are ignorant of our show.
Yeah.
Help them see the light.
Don't let them be ignoramuses. Well, with that, Adam, I think we're going to have to come back next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And a very logical episode of The Greatest Generation.
I'm hearing the Super Tramp song in my head as we speak.
Make it so. Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.